Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. All right, fans, thanks for tuning in to another episode. I'm here today with Emily Durgan. She's an American long distance runner from Standish, Maine. She attended the University of Connecticut and was a 9-time American Athletic Conference champion. After graduating from UConn in May of 2017, Emily continued running professionally and became one of the top American road racers. She moved to Flagstaff, Arizona in 2019 and is sponsored by Adidas. This January, she ran a 67:54 in the Houston Half Marathon, becoming the sixth fastest American ever. Emily, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Let's talk about that Houston Half Marathon first. That's right down the road from me, actually. I'm in San Antonio right now.
Ah, very cool.
Yeah, it's such a big race. I actually almost went to go watch it. I forget what happened that weekend and why I didn't, but such a big race. A lot of people like go and to that race specifically.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I remember my first time running a half marathon. At the time I was sponsored by Under Armour, and it was 2019. I ran my first half marathon there and had a terrible experience with it. I can go back and I made a social media post after this time racing it, but I think I ran like 73 minutes and I was like 48th place or something in the race. And yeah, remember seeing all these happy athletes run like super fast times and like how people said, oh, it's such a good course to run like a great half marathon. And I was just so defeated by the distance because I just had such a bad experience with it, you know, probably for a mix of reasons. My first half marathon, still newly pro, confidence wasn't quite there. But anyways, I went back this year and didn't have really a time goal. I had a really fun summer of racing the summer before, and I took a really big break. And basically, my goal was just to run with the front group. And the front group ended up being a woman like Sarah Hall chasing the American record and Dom Scott, you know, running a crazy fast half marathon. And Fiona O'Keefe was in there, who was a fellow American. So yeah, we ended up all, essentially Sarah Hall pulled six women under 68 minutes because
amazing.
She was chasing that American record and us crazy, you know, there was like seven or so of us that went with it and it led to fast times. So just, yeah, really fun, happy experience.
You know, it's so fun when you put it that way, because sure, in a race, especially in the sport of running, it's like, you know, Sarah's your competitor in a sense, but it's like, you guys are supporting each other, you know, sure, you're competing and you're racing against each other. But when one person does great, it helps other people do great too, which is like, that's just an awesome story to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it helped, you know, for essentially, I think it was like 8 to 10 miles. She had a bunch of women around her besides just her pacer. So I'm sure that helped her, you know, stay on pace. Cause at the end of the day, she, in her mind, she was like, oh crap, if I don't keep this up, somebody else might take this record from me. So it was really awesome. And she was really happy for me when I finished, and to see that I had run sub 68 minutes was huge, major PR.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of want to jump right into nutrition if I can quickly, because when I work with athletes who are doing half marathon, but maybe not at your level. And we talk about like during race fueling, but then there's at a half marathon distance for you going so much faster at a 67 minute race. Like, do you need to fuel during a 67 minute race?
So I don't. Obviously, Houston temperature is that time of year in January. It's very mild. So So I wasn't, you know, needing water or anything like that. Obviously, leading into the race, I'm making sure that I'm hydrating and electrolytes, like honestly, the old school Pedialyte, kind of sipping on days before, you know, right before the race, I have my, it's really hard because the race is so early. So I'll try to eat as much as I can. And then I do, you know, Morton makes a great goo that has carbs and caffeine in it. So even a race as short as a 5K, I'm actually taking at least half of one of those before just to give that last bit in case I didn't get enough in my breakfast. So that's kind of how I do half marathon when I'm really going after a time. Obviously, these hot summer races, you know, I just got back from New York mini 10K and they have water out throughout the course and it was a really humid day. So I did see women like Kiara D'Amato. She did take water, you know, and I think that it just varies athlete to athlete. And it's, yeah, very, very much depends on the weather. But obviously a 67 kind of going all out, perfect conditions, I wasn't fueling during that race.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. Because yeah, it's one of the half marathon is a tricky distance where so many people don't need to fuel. It totally depends on your training status, the environment, and how well did you fuel the week leading up to it and breakfast and all that. But then it's one of those things where, like, I think our non-elite runners, if we're out on the course for 90 minutes or 2 hours, like, definitely need to fuel. But when you get it done in just about, you know, just 67 minutes, it's like, you know, you just have a solid week of fueling, a solid breakfast, that pre-race carb, and then you get to just focus purely on running.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that will definitely change when I prepare for my first marathon. Then to practice it and be very diligent about every 5K, getting in, you know, what I need. So that's something that I'm excited to learn a bit more on because I'm not educated on it yet. So work closely with my support system here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And figure out what works for you, both the foods or the beverages and what makes it seamless for you. You know, I love not only being at races live and seeing it, but also just when you watch the video coverage and like just the exchange of the running by the fueling in the water station. And like it happens so quick. Sometimes it's a mess, but it's like, it's also some people are so efficient at it. It's very impressive.
Yeah. And that all comes with practice. So I'm sure my first one, it might not go to plan, but I hear that you can't freak out. If you miss a bottle or something, you just got to, you know, grab, because there's normal people stops too. So you can,
yes,
grab Gatorade or something if you end up missing your elite bottle, which I hear is, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So when, I'm not aware of this marathon goal for you. When is that you mentioned when you trained for your first marathon?
Yeah, I haven't quite announced which one, but it's looking to be, as long as things kind of keep going to plan, this fall, I'm looking to run my first marathon. There's a few that are in the fall. So yeah, kind of trying to last minute figure out which one will be the best experience for my first one with my coach and agent. And yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. I had no idea that a debut was such a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited for it and excited just to kind of, you know, at the end of the day, I just want my first one to be a good experience. I've talked to my coach about the training. I don't want to do anything crazy for this first one, but obviously be prepared, but just kind of be able to compete and not necessarily put out a time or anything like that. So yeah, we'll see. And
super exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So the fall is the plan. Somewhere in the next, gosh, yeah, it's coming right up, 4 months or so.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's backtrack a bit, Emily. Like what you ran in college at UConn, which by the way, I went to UMass. So
oh, kind cool. of like
close by. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did a tour of UConn because I lived pretty close to there growing up, but they didn't have a nutrition degree there. At the time, at least.
Right. At the time. Yes. Because I actually went in a nutrition major.
Oh, okay.
I did. Yes. That quickly ended. Yep. Unfortunately, I was very passionate about it, but I will tell people I give you a lot of credit. It is very challenging to become a registered dietitian. The courses are very crazy. And yeah, freshman year, you're put into all these chemistry classes and mm-hmm. you know, very, very difficult. So,
well, thank you for just appreciating that organic chemistry was very difficult in college. And yeah, I think there's such a difference, like having an interest in nutrition versus getting that degree in it. But I'm interested to hear that UConn did then get a nutrition degree, because when I was looking at it, and I'm older than you, but we're not talking like 20 years here. So, right. So it's cool, because when I was looking into it, I was like, if I want to do something relating to food, but go to UConn, which I was somewhat interested in going there, I was going to have to study like agriculture. And then I was like, I don't think this is really exactly what I wanted to do.
So, right.
That's right. Funny.
Yeah. So that is the issue. So basically, yes, they had, you know, you could get your nutrition degree, but then your dietetics, you know, because you have to go on for more schooling. It's not like you just graduate with a nutrition degree and you can go and start working in dietetics. No, it's much more challenging than that. Then you have to get accepted into a dietetic program, which is very competitive. And I don't know if UConn had that, like maybe that was something that you'd have to go on for different schooling. But anyways, it was kind of like when I heard like, oh, you mean when I graduate in 4 years, I can't just start working in the profession. And my advisor was like, no, it doesn't work that way. So I think that might've been a little discouraging for me. And then, like I said, I just really struggled in those, UConn, it's a massive school. They throw you into these lecture halls, 100 plus kids learning chemistry. And if you don't pass, then yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah. So what did you switch to? I think I've heard like communications, was it? And something with sports. Was it sports broadcasting?
Sports broadcasting. Yeah. So much more up my alley. You know, it's so hard being 18 years old and being like, oh, this is what I want to do. You know, I think it's just because I was a runner. I was passionate about health and wellness. So I just thought, oh, nutrition. You know, I went to a small private school and I loved chemistry. You know, there's 10 kids in my class. Like it was. So I was like, oh, nutrition will be perfect for me. But I quickly learned that, you know, maybe this wasn't exactly the career path for me. And then, yeah, had some friends that were in communications and they were taking all the journalism classes and really enjoyed it. So switched to a double major in communications and journalism and focused on sports broadcasting. Had so much fun with it and definitely much more up my alley.
Yeah. You know, but it is really hard trying to figure out like, yeah, senior year of high school, what do you want to do? And then freshman year, even if you go into school undecided, like you still have to decide eventually. And it can be really, really hard. And it's good to let your interests guide you. So, but it still did, right? Your interest in sports and in health, like it can be expressed in so many different ways.
Exactly.
So
wasn't necessarily, yes, nutrition. So,
yeah. So at what, like you had a great collegiate career. I think I mentioned it in your bio, right? The 9-time ACC champion. So a great athletic career in the sport of cross country and track and field. And then at what point did you say like, I'm going to pursue this post-collegiately? Well, obviously somewhere post-collegiately senior year, but like, when did you know that I can keep doing this?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely had a lot of ups and downs in my career from even a young age. I started running pretty young. I did all the Junior Olympics, USATF, you know, in like the 7th grade at a club. And obviously it was just fun at that point, but then got to in high school, kind of got to a point that I realized like, oh, like I could go to college for free if I do well these next couple of years. And sophomore year of high school, I made Foot Locker Nationals, which is a pretty big deal because they only take 10 from each region, 40 girls in the entire country. And after I did that, that's when all these schools started reaching out, like my sophomore year of high school. So I was very, very young and kind of talking about like body change in the sport. Like I hadn't really gone through puberty. I was still quite small, like looked the same as I had like all through middle school. Like it's like I've always been muscular, but I was little. And then junior year, I kind of turned into my body I am now. And that was a bit like almost 10 pounds in a year that happened like sophomore to junior year, you know, and to this day, this is my body. I haven't really fluctuated much since, but you know, I really struggled from sophomore, even through senior year. Like I never made a Foot Locker Nationals again. Like all my PRs had come from that sophomore year of high school. So it was really stressful those last 2 years of high school, thinking like, oh, you know, schools aren't going to want me anymore because I'm struggling just to get to the point where I was sophomore year. So that was definitely challenging. And that kind of that challenge continued to my freshman year of college. Thankfully, you know, there were schools that saw the potential in me and had done well in high school. So at the end of the day, I ended up picking UConn because I just thought it was more, it was a little bit lower stress running environment. My other school I was looking at was Providence. I loved, powerhouse distance runners. You know, Emily Sisson was there at the time, like my idol, and would have, you know, loved to go to Providence. And I think my parents also helped navigate this decision a little bit, just with a little bit of the expectations. And I mean, the coach was straight up with it that he would give me a scholarship my freshman year. And then whatever I did freshman year would dictate the rest of my college career.
Like the pressure. Yeah. A lot of pressure.
It was a lot of pressure. And my parents were like, okay, like, that's great that you're going to get a full scholarship your freshman year, but let's just, you know, look at a few other schools. And UConn, Andrea Grove McDonough at the time, is very late in the deciding process, but, you know, fell in love with her, fell in love with UConn. And unfortunately, she didn't have any money left for my freshman year, but she said, you know, I think you have a lot of potential. If you come here, we can't give you a full scholarship your freshman year, but then the rest of your years, you know, as long as you're improving, I promise. And she like kind of, we had this like handshake deal that will get you a scholarship. So that was a lot of trust that I had to have in her.
A lot.
But then it wasn't as much pressure, so to speak. So thank goodness I went with that one because my freshman year was terrible. I struggled figuring out, you know, it wasn't just running. It was figuring out what major I wanted to be in. You know, I was just first time away from home. I just really had a hard freshman year. So that was kind of the peaks and then valley in my career at a young age. And then sophomore year, I don't exactly know what happened, but something kind of just clicked and came back and was really excited about my new major, really excited with running. And that's when I started having a lot of success at the conference level at UConn.
Yeah. You just hit on so many good things, Emily. That is why I love having this podcast and just sharing these stories, being that, you know, puberty is a tough time for female athletes. And even though it's really hard to deal with, it's like, but we're all going to go through it.
Right.
And I think the more that we talk about that and normalize that, and also have this conversation with coaches too, so that And I think coaches are really coming around to, at least the ones that I've spoken to, of knowing when they're going through recruiting, like, okay, you had a great freshman, sophomore year, you know, junior, senior year are struggling, but that doesn't mean that's the story forever. It doesn't mean that you've lost it. It just means like you're adapting, you're changing, you're adapting, and you've still got all this potential. And that's what's great about a college career is you've got 4 years to work on this, you know? And so I think having these conversations, it's important for the coaches to recognize that and also for you as an athlete, because it's hard. It's hard to say, I was faster last year, you know? And that's where our mind then thinks, like you mentioned, you gained 10 pounds in a year, and that was great because your body had to develop. You can't stay in a prepubescent body and expect to run collegiately. You have to develop and get stronger and change. But it doesn't make it easier, right? So I think just like knowing like this happens, it's okay. Some people do keep cruising through and keep PRing and progressing. But if you are one of those girls that like, you know, feels like my performance like went backwards or whatever it might be, or I'm just at a standstill for a couple of years, to know that there's hope that you're just adapting and adjusting. And I think, Emily, thank you for sharing that because you're just living proof of it, right?
Yeah, for sure. And that's why it's like funny to look back now being like, oh, I wish I wouldn't have put all that pressure on myself those 3 years. I'd say it was probably like junior, senior, and then freshman year of college. Really took me 3 years to kind of adapt to, yeah, being a woman and kind of just the emotional trauma that I was going through as well. You know, it's not just physical.
Oh, yeah.
Emotionally, you're changing. So yeah, I wish that I could have told younger Emily, like, oh, just don't worry about it. Just keep doing what you're doing. And eventually you're going to get to the other side of this. But obviously, you know, it takes being in it to know how to overcome it. So yeah, really thankful that I had great support system. Freshman year at UConn, Andrea Grove McDonough kind of saw what I was going through. So I was able to save some of my eligibility by redshirting cross country. I did, you know, we were trying because we just thought like, oh, we can do this. We can do this. And unfortunately, we made it too far in cross country. And in that season, we couldn't save. But indoor and outdoor, we were able to redshirt, which allowed me to have a fifth year, which was amazing because then by the time of 22, running a fifth year, I was, yeah, you know, Emily 2.0.
Right.
It was really helpful for this long-term success that I'm, you know, still building on.
Yeah, such a lesson in patience and perseverance, I think, and giving yourself grace, space. Patience, perseverance, grace, space. Laughing at my choice of words here. But it's also because you mentioned like freshman year, regardless of the whole like body changing thing, freshman year is just a huge adaptation, the emotional changes, the life changes, making new friends, social changes. And so it's a lot to go through. And like you said, I think just sharing the story again is great for people to know, like you're going to get through it and then be, you know, a better version that fourth year, junior, senior, fifth year, maybe, and beyond. So,
yeah.
Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the Fast Track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
So you really had this great, like, you know, you had that patience with yourself, but you stuck with it, stuck with that sport, and then saw yourself improve throughout the collegiate years.
Yeah. And it was so much fun. Unfortunately, we had some coaching changes at UConn. So Andrea ended up leaving UConn. And then the Begleys, who now are pro coaches at Atlanta Track Club, came in and coached me for a few years, which was awesome. And then they went to start Atlanta Track Club. And then JJ Clark, who's now at Stanford, came in. So in five
years. That's a lot of changes.
Yes. In 5 years, I had three different coaches that are all, you know, I learned something from all of them and continued to improve. And yeah, like I said, I also, another thing that I think is great for college athletes to hear is I never made a national championship. I never was all American. I didn't get to that level. I mean, I was doing well at the conference. We, you know, my school put a lot of stress on that and we had a ton of fun with it because it was a team environment. So I would run all the events, the 10K, the 5K, indoor, I was doing the DMR and yeah, had a lot of success at the conference level, but yeah, never ran on the national stage. So I think it's good for college athletes to hear that, you know, it's not just those top five athletes that go pro. And I wish there was some more, you know, I know there's a few groups that are like kind of like that sub-elite division between college and professional, but I hope that, you know, when I'm done in the sport that maybe I can start something a little bit like that.
Yeah, it's definitely getting there. There's, you know, all these sub-elite groups and Also, I've been curious. I hope I don't sound naive in saying this, but so many of these groups call themselves a project. Do you know why that is?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
I know, because the only reason I know this is because a lot of brands don't want to use the word like club.
Ah.
Well, maybe it's a like a different word to use for club. So they use projects.
Maybe.
Yeah. Cause I know that like a lot of brands don't, you know, cause I think that they have a lot of brands have like separate like clubs, so to speak, for like, running. So they don't want to kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, that might be it. You can have a running club, or you can have like your training team. And so that's
right.
A project. Yeah. I literally, as I'm talking out loud, I was like going through all of these teams that I've heard of and worked with some people on or done free presentations for. And I'm like, they're all projects.
Yeah, that could be it. It could just be like a branding thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's building up for that space for people to, because as you're a testament to, is that gradual progression year to year to year. I keep getting better, keep getting better, keep getting better. So, I mean, like you said, you had great conference success, great success in high school, but it was very gradual. And so, you know, we want to give a shout out to the athletes who, you know, have all-star performances freshman year. That's amazing. Or in high school and keep it up. That's amazing. But there's so many people like you that if you have the right training, you have the will and desire and the passion for it, and you keep giving yourself that opportunity, things can just keep getting better and better. And so I think these opportunities post-collegiately are awesome to see athletes build and, you know, get to the place potentially where you are today.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess everyone's journey to the top can look a little bit different. So very fortunate that when I graduated UConn, I had not really options, but I had people in my corner telling me, oh, you know, you're just getting started. You really should keep going. And, you know, financially, I was like, well, how am I going to do that? Because I'm not getting a pro deal. I don't have an agent to negotiate for me. Like, how am I going to do this? So I reached out to Mark Coogan, who coaches New Balance Boston, because I had some connections at Abby D'Agostino. I lived with her little sister for 5 years in college. So I was very close with Abby. And then there was another woman on the team at the time that was coached by JJ Clark in Tennessee named Liz. So I had these connections. So basically I typed up my cover letter and resume, and I called up Mark Coogan and asked if I could meet him. And I drove to his house in Newburyport and sat at his dining room table and basically sold myself to him, saying how I would be such a great addition to the team and how I really wanted to train with these women because, you know, at that time, and still they were the best in the country that was on that team. And I really wanted to keep training post-collegiately, but didn't have a coach. So he said, let me go talk to my boss and see if you could get a spot on the team. And yeah, so I was able to get a spot on the team. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And it came with, you know, I got New Balance gear. I had coaching, I had support, and no income. So it wasn't a contract or anything, but I nannied in Boston and ran with these women. And yeah, that's where my professional career kind of started.
You went after it, right? If you want something, you have to make moves, connect, network, and just ask for it. I love that.
Yeah, for sure. And then that is how I met my now agent, was through the group. And like I said, when I started running well in some of those US championships, I signed my first like professional deal, which ended up being with Under Armour a few years back. So that's what moved me up to Flagstaff. And yeah, still very close with Mark and the girls. They're out here all the time. So we actually still overlap when we can. And I give a lot of my professional running credit to him, because without him, I wouldn't have known how to bridge that gap between being in college and getting a pro deal.
Yeah, right. I've spoken to a few other runners at a similar like level to you too, where it's that like we have our collegiate runners that might land a pro deal right away, but there's that messy middle of that first year post-college of like, how am I figuring this out? You know, how do I get in touch with agents? And it's totally possible. And it's such an inspirational thing to see and to hear and to see you continue to succeed. Yeah.
Thanks.
So yeah, of course. I'd also like to dig into like on the nutrition side of things, like I think culture of nutrition and fueling maybe from that transition as we've been focusing on a collegiate team versus what fueling and nutrition might look like as a pro athlete. Are there differences in like the team environment or culture of surrounding food that you've experienced?
Oh, 100%. It's so funny. I still think to this day of like when I moved to Boston and was living close to Corey McGee at the time, and she kind of took me under her wing and showed me all these Boston places. And I just remember the first time meeting her, we were like getting coffee and she was getting like a scone and like a coffee. And she was saying how like, you know, every Monday she liked to go to this one place after her easy run to have like a pastry and a coffee. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like that was just in college, it was like not like that, you know, like thankfully at UConn, it kind of changed year to year. When I first came into UConn, we had a lot of girls that I don't know, they were good in high school and they came in and it was really like weird, strict eating. Maybe it was just over healthy eating. And my parents were always healthy, and being a runner, like you always think you have to eat healthy. So then coming into college, like I knew already how to eat. And I don't know why I didn't just keep doing what I had always done, but it was more like you're at a dining hall. So then I was watching what other girls on the team were doing. Mm-hmm. And we did have a few girls when I first went to college that were struggling 100% with eating disorders that were just, you know, dining halls would be like salads and all this. And I'd be like, that's not normally what I would eat. But I guess now that I'm in college, this is what you eat. So definitely went through that in college 100%. And, you know, as I got older and moved off campus and lived in my own apartment and became wiser, that culture went away because I was able to kind of control what I was doing. But when I was like freshman, sophomore, Emily, it was tough. Oh, yes. Because I was looking up to these older girls, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I was doing.
Well, I love your story though, right away, of just the difference of like, suddenly when I'm a pro athlete, like, oh no, like we're eating pastries after our run, you know, and that's normalized. And so, but it is the collegiate environment is and high school, but more so college for sure. You're right. As athletes, we're already health conscious. But then there's like this other layer of eating together in the dining halls. Maybe it's the fear of diet cultures ingrained in people of like freshman 15 and stuff that just gets people hyper conscious. But doing things, I'm so glad to hear, Emily, it sounds like you had a strong nutrition background growing up, which is probably what, like, even though things were a struggle, it's what allowed you to, like, once you moved out on your own, weren't eating in the dining halls, like you were able to get right back in step with what you knew was right and how to fuel yourself. But that's just like so many people in that team environment, we just have all that pressure to like eat a certain way, or other people are eating salad. So now I have to eat salad.
So it, cause essentially, you know, cause then I was a freshman, so to speak, again, on the New Balance Boston team. And then I was hanging out with the upper class and then she was,
yeah.
And I was like, wow, you know, and then Abby D'Agostino was also a great mentor because she openly talks about how in college she also struggled with the same thing, just, you know, not eating enough. And then, you know, when I went over to her house, how she was eating full fat yogurt and whole milk and all this stuff, and like how she had actually started to feel better post-collegiately or when she had graduated from college. So yeah, I started doing all that because yeah, all through college, you know, we were doing the sugar-free everything. We laugh about it now because I'm still close with all my college teammates and they went on to not be runners and they just live in the real world now. But we joke about how we used to just drink these like sugar-free drink mixes and like the low fat. Oh, it was just awful. A zero calorie like salad dressing. I don't know where any of that came from, but it was just, I think it's just people before me were doing it. So then I just did it. And Yeah. Thankfully had a really strong group of women around me, and we went to altitude camps together. So like I said, the Corys and the Abbeys, the Katrina Coogans were, you know, seeing what they were eating. And a huge, amazing example of someone who's just great with her nutrition is Ellie Purier. She's a really good friend of mine. And if someone spent the day with her and saw what she ate, they'd be like, okay, like I'm in. I mean, she's an Olympic finalist. And if you saw what she ate, it is probably not what these younger girls think. It's crazy.
Right. And so this is like the kind of message that I want, if a college or high school athlete is listening right now, is to like, if you want to be a great runner, like eat like the pros, which is not sugar-free salad dressing and zero calorie this. And, you know, like it's, and I'm not, get your spinach in. I'm not trying to diss salads, but like, that's not going to fuel you for performance, you know? And I think it's like, we so often, I think at that age and in college, we are so influenced by our peers and we're thinking this is right. And it's like, when can we break that cycle? Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to motivate anybody listening to like, you can be the person that breaks that cycle. It doesn't matter if you're a freshman and this is what all the upperclassmen are doing, like break that cycle, start fueling your body with the whole fat yogurt, like you were just saying, or just letting go of that pressure to eat how somebody else is eating and fuel your own body. And that way there, by the time you're a senior, the incoming freshmen are going to have a totally different environment. Like the change, I just think this collegiate environment of, and the diet culture that's there and the struggles that athletes are facing, like, I just wonder when it's going to change. It's on my mind right now, because I was talking to a couple of my clients that are in college right now, and they're like doing great work with me, but they were just expressing to me like, but it's so hard because my teammates are all still doing this. And it's like, okay, so you're making a change, you're making the changes with me, but they're still every single day faced with the pressures of what their teammates are doing and all that. And it's like, this environment needs to change.
For sure. Yeah. And I think a lot of that is just, you know, being around the wrong people can sometimes, as much as like even honestly, like it, like I don't want to say that you don't see it at all at the pro level, because it still very much is prevalent in some cases in the professional level. Not everyone is in this great mindset and in doing, you know, everything correct. There's still a lot of athletes that struggle with it and kind of carry on that same high school mentality and college mentality. And for me, I mean, as bad as it is, I've kind of had to like remove myself from some people. There's people that I know that, you know, if I'm going on a training camp and like in the same house as, like, I can't live with them, because sometimes the more you're around it, it's kind of affects you. And yeah, even in college, I definitely had the freshman 15, because I was trying to do that whole like eat like the seniors, but then I was almost eating for them. So then I was like overcompensating.
That happens too. Yeah.
And I joke and say like, that was me. Like I was eating for them. Cause it's just like, so it's really difficult thing to navigate. And it's still, I do hear close friends of mine that will get a house with someone and be like, oh, it's so hard because, you know, I know I'm eating what I need to, but like, I see what she's eating and like, I can't, you don't want to say anything because we're all adults now. So it's kind of like, you just have to, so that's one thing that, as unfortunate it is, I, there are people that I've kind of had to just separate myself from.
Yeah, no, that's smart on your part. You know, you got to do what you got to do to take care of your own physical and mental health. But I think it kind of comes down to just like, social eating in like as a team in these social environments around other people, even just on the family level, you know, comparing what you eat to how your parents or how your siblings are eating. Like it just adds another dynamic that's a challenge. And, and it's hard, but I think the best thing we can do is focus on ourselves, our own performance, our own health. And like you said, like you've kind of had to, like, you have your boundaries as to like, how much time am I going to spend with this person when I know that people influence us? That's just the thing. So you're, what is one of those silly sayings of like, you're the sum of the five people you hang out with most often, right? And so you're going to be influenced and you get to choose who you want to be around so that those influences are more positive, whether it be with nutrition or otherwise.
Exactly. Yes. And thankfully, like I've given examples, like since being pro, I've had great teammates and kind of like all on the same page. And yeah, it's really, really awesome in that respect. But I don't want people to think that all pros are, you know, this way. Like there is still a major environment that's, yeah, it's tough to navigate.
Yeah. And across all sports and all life stages. But I just want to thank you, Emily, for like having this conversation, being honest about it with your journey, where your struggles were, but also like, I think you're an inspiration for reflecting on what's healthy for you. And also I think an inspiration on just what that persistency and gradual improvement looks like too.
Thanks.
Yeah. So Emily, I always end every podcast with a few fun questions. Hopefully you've been having fun this whole time, but a few other fun questions. Are you ready to play along?
I am. I'll do my best.
Okay. If there was one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life, but never get sick of it, what would it be?
I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is rice, because my boyfriend and I eat so much white rice, and it is funny, and we never get sick of it. I mean, we do a lot of different things with it. And even though that sounds kind of like boring, it's just, you can do so much with rice. So you can like make fried rice, you can have it in the for breakfast, lunch, cold, like in salads. So yeah, that'd be my
answer. I feel you. I love rice. Mm-hmm. I love rice. We had white rice last night. And I, for whatever reason though, I have to cook the rice. My husband screws it up every time. He just makes it too sticky, which isn't bad. Like I still like it.
Yeah, too much water. Yeah.
Yeah. I still like it, but he always makes it too sticky. But I was on a client call last night. So he made the rice and it was quite sticky, but I was like, it's okay, babe. I still love it. White rice is still good, even sticky.
And weird. I love rice pudding.
I ate rice pudding last night too.
Yeah. I have some in my fridge right now. And because I mean, all rice pudding is whole milk and rice and sugar. You can make, if you have leftover rice, you can make it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Throw some cinnamon in there.
Yeah. So see, rice, underrated food.
I think you can, I haven't done it myself, but you can also make rice pudding like in a slow cooker, like as the rice is cooking, add the milk and everything. Sugar. Yeah.
Oh, I have to look that up.
Yeah. Really good. No, it's so funny that you brought up rice pudding too, because I just bought that at the grocery store and I thought to myself, I love rice pudding and I haven't had this in a long time. And so
as a kid, I used to always eat it.
Yeah. I keep talking about it because I think you're the first person who's said rice as an answer, but I think it's a great answer. So many different ways to eat it. So this might be an obvious one, but some people throw me for a loop for our next question. What is your favorite sport to participate in?
Favorite sport to participate in? Well, obviously right now it is running, but as my hair is wet right now, I just got out of the pool. So growing up, I always did a variety of sports. So when I'm done professional running, it will not be my exercise of choice.
Yeah.
So yes, I love getting in the pool, even if it's just 20 minutes swimming. I have this, I even did this morning too. I have one of those mirrors. So I do like little, I don't know. I just think they're fun. Like the 13-minute routine or whatever. So like Pilates, yoga, swimming, that's going to be my jam when I'm done running.
Yeah. I love those mirrors. They're fun. I don't have one myself, but I've gone to lots of hotels that have them and I look forward to using the hotel gym just for the mirror.
Yeah. They're so fun. They put the music on and there's a bunch of, and a lot of like the core routines are great. Like today I did like a 13-minute one. I love them. I love like that interactive side of things, which is running is just very, you're just by yourself. So.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. So how about as a spectator, is there a favorite sport that you like to be a fan of?
If it's like watching something live, I love hockey. So
those New England roots.
Yes. My boyfriend was a golfer. So he's like, he gets so like upset when I say that hockey's my favorite sport. Because golf, sorry, it is not fun to watch. But yes, in college, us girls, we would always go to the college hockey games. It's just so like, you know, it's just, there's a lot going on. So that's probably still my favorite live sport to watch.
Awesome. And our last question, I think you've actually dropped a lot of names of some great female athletes, but to kind of finish up this podcast, is there a female athlete out there that is what I call fierce, fit, and fueled. So just a role model when it comes to her mindset, her training, her nutrition. And who would that be and why?
Yes. So I've named a lot of people that are around my age that I'm, you know, more so peers with. You know, the Abby D'Agostinos, the Corey McGee's, the Rachel Snyders, these people that I've just, Ellie Puryear, that I've been surrounded by, which is amazing. And I mean, I am now around her a lot, but Jen Rines is my coach's wife, and she's a three-time Olympian. She's amazing. Her first Olympic team was in the marathon, and her last Olympic team was in the 5K. So this woman,
wow.
Yeah, she's incredible. Yeah, had an incredible career. During her peak of her pro career, she was training a lot with Dina Castor in Mammoth. But yeah, Jen is awesome. And I've gotten to pick her brain a little bit since being coached by Terrence. I've only been coached by him for a year now. So it's still a very new relationship that I'm getting to know with her. But she's just awesome, fun woman. And with the nutrition thing, loves her red wine, loves her Indian pizza, loves her good food. She's definitely a good role model to have in the sport. So very thankful that I get to be around her.
It's awesome. And someone who's enjoying food and the taste and all that it has to offer. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Her and Terrence are both really good. Just good lights in the sport.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Emily, for sharing all of this today. This was an awesome conversation, and I'm super excited to continue to follow your professional career and more. Thank you so much for having this conversation.
Thanks for inviting me.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode, and thanks for listening. But before I let you go, I have free resources that you can have access to right away, right now, so that you can start fueling your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. First, I have your Red S recovery race. If you've ever wondered if you might be struggling with Red S, curious to learn more, or know you have Red S and are looking to recover fast, then you can head to www.riseupnutritionrun.com/redS and download the Red S Recovery Race. See how you place and figure out the next steps to recovery. Plus, while there, I have a few other great resources for you, including 3 nutrition secrets that every elite athlete swears by and access to our private Facebook community, Female Athlete Nutrition. So again, to gain access to all of this, head to riseupnutritionrun.com/redS. That's /REDS. And you can gain access and get the help you need fast. Too many girls and women and female athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. Become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and I'll see you next time.